Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware.
And I'm your mother.
How are you, Mum?
All right, darling. I know who I am today.
Well, because you've got your penny on that with has your name on.
Yeah. Helps.
It's very chic, Mum. You look ready to either be on Celebrity MasterChef or The Great British Menu.
The Great British Menu. I've just finished watching the final. And
how
was it? Thrilling.
Was Oli Marlowe in the final?
The young guy.
Owlis. He worked at Owlis.
Yes.
Yes. Simon Rogan talked about Owlis when he was on our podcast.
Oh,
before.
He was fantastic, Oli.
Well, speaking of Michelin star chefs, we've had quite a few on the podcast before. How many? What, we've had Raymond Blanc.
Simon Rogan. Tom Kerridge.
And this is somebody that I've been trying to get for years. We've been trying to get it going.
Jessie, why is that?
Because I've had one of my best meals there.
I looked at his menu. So it's quite eclectic, isn't it? It's not just Chinese food.
It's pretty much Chinese food, Mum. His set menu is called A Taste of China.
Yeah, lots of it's Chinese and it's written. Where's he from? Is he from Hong Kong or?
No, I think he's from London. And the whole story is that he studied chemistry at Oxford University and then I don't know whether he was kicked out or he left, but he went to work at his family's restaurant at the age of 22 and just developed the family business and now has...
He uses amazing produce.
It's honestly one of the best set menus I've ever had, and you can sit at the kitchen counter. So you're on the counter and you watch on the pass.
With us.
Yeah, and so you watch at the pass. And I have to say, he was a little snappy with his fellow chefs, but I dug it.
He's met his match, darling.
But he was very charming, but oh my God, he ran a tight ship.
God, well, I'm going to stay out the way.
It was so exciting. I swear, he always sees me when I'm pregnant because I think I was there and I had to get mocktails. But I went for my birthday years ago and it's this really small, beautiful restaurant. His wife is front of house. And she's just charming. And it's just real family vibes, but with the most exciting Chinese food I've ever had. Most exciting food I've had, honestly, it was such a memorable time. He got a second Michelin star this year, I think.
Fantastic.
So he's got two. And he is just really nice. I really, really liked him. It was such exciting food. And he's making the mains. So that's nice.
It's very nice, darling. I hope he doesn't mind having my onion rice.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's difficult when a Michelin star chef and somebody who does Chinese cuisine, which is very out of your remit, like that's not what you do.
Didn't have a clue. I mean, I just panicked.
Maybe you can't be on Celebrity MasterChef. I don't know.
What do you mean? Of course I could.
But you'd panic.
Well, I panic.
And then you'd shout.
Yeah, probably
at Monica.
Would. Monica.
And then you'd offend her, and they keep it all in the edit.
Yeah, no, I'm not going on it.
So yes, so on the menu tonight, Andrew Wong is bringing a dish that he put up on Instagram, which looked freaking great. So I'm really happy that he's bringing that.
To get cooking the veggies, darling.
This is what we're having.
I've made dessert.
Cod cheeks steamed on the bone with salted, pickled and fresh chilies. The most incredible silky texture to the cheek. Our gift to all our guests as we welcome you back.
He wants my onion rice with it.
Look, Mum, the onion rice is legendary. So, yeah.
Is it?
And then what's for pud?
I've made an apple, walnut, honey and yogurt cake.
Just go fully away from...
I just didn't know what to do, darling.
That sounds lovely. Double Michelin star chef Andrew Wong finally coming up on Table Manners.
Cheers.
Cheers.
What
cheers.
Do you say cheers. In Chinese?
Gambei.
Gambei.
Yeah.
And which part of are your family from China or Hong Kong?
So my mother is from Hong Kong. My father's side of the family was from Sichuan, which is in the center.
Yeah.
Which is obviously famous for really spicy
Sichuan,
food.
Yeah.
So this dish is actually not from Sichuan, it's from Hunan, which is
Hunan province.
Hunan province, yeah.
Hunan. So that's famous.
Hunan is famous. The restaurant is very famous in Sloane Square.
Yes.
Yeah, Michael Pang and Mr. Pang's restaurant. And, you know, Hunan food is kind of similar to Sichuanese food, but it doesn't have the Sichuan peppercorns.
Oh, right.
So that's the big major difference between Sichuanese food and Hunanese food.
So I had my honeymoon in Hong Kong.
Did you really? Well, last year?
No, Dad didn't year turn before. Up for... How many days did Dad not turn
he
up for?
He came 3 days after.
Needless to say, they didn't stay married.
We didn't stay together. But I loved Hong Kong. I thought it was a very exciting place. Have you been?
So last time I was there was November 2019.
Oh, really recently?
Quite recent, yeah. I was, but there's different. I was in a casino in Macau.
We stayed at the Sunset Hotel. And that's the casino.
Are there lots of casinos?
I've got to. There was only one then, so I went for a massage, and
went for a massage in Macau.
In Macau, yeah.
Really.
And it was okay, but they offered my husband a massage and offered to massage other parts that other people hadn't reached before. And he said, no, I'm not like that. But they massaged me fine. It was okay. But we stayed in this very funny hotel in Macau that served kippers and porridge.
Well, you know, Macanese cuisine is very unique, right? So Macanese, it's ex-Portuguese, kind of has African, Singaporean, Chinese... Loads of influences from all over the world.
It had a spicy chicken dish that blew my mouth that I was still hot for 3 days later.
You know, I mean, Macanese would really kind of see themselves as being connected to China. And they have things like bechamel sauce on their menu, which is weird. Just having like cheesy fish sauce or
amazing.
They have like chicken curry or they have like, you know, grilled prawns, which you would sometimes associate with being kind of Mediterranean or kind of... something Greek or whatnot, but it's very traditional Macanese food.
Yeah.
So, Mum, this is why you need to go to A1, because is it still called Taste of China?
It is.
Set menu, kind of the tasting menu. And he takes you all around different regions.
If you'd taken me last time, darling.
Sorry, I was going for my birthday dinner with my husband, and we got to sit. What's the number of the counter that you call it?
8.
Why
number,
is
lucky,
that?
Just because it's lucky number.
Oh, okay. It was the most phenomenal tasting menu. So you'd be
Jesse's
having...
Jesse's not stopped talking about how fabulous it was.
Ah,
and it's
kind.
Been over 2 years, because last time I saw you, I was pregnant with my last child. So
Jesse, stop it.
I know. It means that I'm due an A1 meal. That's what I need to do. But I just remember there was this like cumin lamb burger that you did... Was it? Am I right?
Yeah. So that's a celebration.
And that was in the
north? Western part of China.
Kind of nearer to like Muslim region.
Yes. Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan. So obviously people don't know, but actually a third of the landmass of China is kind of Western China, which is Xinjiang province. And the religion there is Islam.
You're kidding?
Yeah. So actually there's a lot of Jewish, there's a big, massive community in China as well.
Where?
Yeah, they're called the Kaifa Jewish community.
Gosh, how interesting.
Yeah. And so, well, anyway, this area is completely Islamic. And what's unique about it is obviously that pork is a massive part of a Chinese diet because it's the thing that we use to bind things with. It's the go-to for kind of lubricating dishes with lard. And actually the word for meat in general in Chinese is actually pork. So if you go on a menu and it says sweet and sour meat, that means it's sweet and sour pork.
Cool.
But obviously in that entire region... there's no pork in the diet. So there's a lot of kind of lamb, goat, and actually the cooking methods are very unique as well. They use kind of like tandoors in the ground.
Interesting.
They use spices which are kind of connected to the Ottoman Empire. So they use a lot of cumin, a lot of kind of mixtures of different spices. They use a lot of pomegranate, a lot
How
of like pickled onions.
This menu.
Have you written books about food besides cookery books?
I tried to write a book once. It didn't sell very well, so I don't know when we're ever going to write another one. Everyone starts out with great intentions, and I imagine that I'm gonna find time to write this, and obviously you end up writing.
But you're
it.
Busy. You're open 6 days a week?
Over five, but we work six.
Five.
And do you still have the other restaurant? Is it Kim?
We closed that one. Yeah, we closed that one last July.
Because of COVID, was it just too hot?
Yeah, it's because it's COVID.
And honestly, it was in the city, right?
It's in the city.
So it's like, which has been dead for that.
It's pretty much dead. But I think it's one of those things, actually. You know, with these kind of times, you kind of reassess what you're good at and what you're not good at, and you reassess whether you're not your good manager or not.
So were you doing food boxes, meals?
No, I purposely didn't do food boxes because I couldn't stand the sight of seeing any more of them on social media.
So then what was lockdown like for you and your family? You've got two kids.
I've got two kids. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I'm someone who does things by extreme. So if I work, I work like nonstop.
And you were on lockdown?
When I'm in my underpants watching Netflix, I could do that for days. Like, yeah, without,
a bit like
with no problem.
Were you living off these super noodles?
I need
to see these super noodles. Don't I'm just loving this I'm, idea we're that not, A Wong, who gets his two Michelin stars during COVID. Well, it was during COVID. Well, kind of. Yeah,
it was. It was.
Jesse, we're not having my rice if with that meal, I'm telling you.
Well, what?
This is what we want.
No, you don't have this to have this tonight.
I've seen these in the Chinese supermarkets.
They started to sell them in kind of high street supermarkets.
This is the
sesame flavour is the original.
Sesame.
So tell us about why you've brought these noodles to Mum's house. Amongst, you know, the champagne and the cod's head. I mean, why these super noodles?
You want the truth or the embellished truth? The truth is that I went shopping for the restaurant yesterday in four different places to buy kind of missing stock. And this was left in my bag from the shopping. But the embellished truth is actually, it's such an important part of being
Do your children like these?
Yes. Everyone has to like them or you're not allowed to call yourself Chinese.
Why don't you let your children eat them?
I would. I guess I've never really given them super noodles. Would you call them super noodles or just noodles?
They just call them noodles. So
called instant noodles.
Yeah. Instant noodles.
Anyway, back to your question. During lockdown. So the important thing is actually, like, for the entirety of their lives, we haven't really spent much time with them. I mean, I don't know if you can relate to that at all. I don't know. But, you know, when you're working in this industry, like, you very rarely see your... Well, I never really saw my parents.
Well,
for
children
example.
Under five really were advantaged by lockdown because they got to spend so much time with their parents.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. You know, and they weren't doing homeschooling all the time.
Sure. Well, you know, I attempted it and I gave up on that pretty quickly. But, you know, it was nice to be at home and spend time with my own kids as opposed to the 30 kids that I spend time with at work every single day. And, you know, it was nice because I'm not used to it. You know, people say, oh, you know, you spent too much time with my kids. But actually, you know, we were still working during the day. There was a lot of stuff to do, like random stuff. You know, the first lockdown was just kind of like getting over the shock and trying to find a plan, which obviously takes a time, you know. And once you
so you didn't work at all during the first lockdown?
It was all kind of like...
admin.
Press, admin, training. And also we started a podcast, sorry.
Yes, let's talk about the podcast.
Yes, so we work with my friend, Dr. Daz at SOAS. So I apparently graduated in social anthropology.
Did you?
Well, yeah. You've got like a bit of a kind of, it's a checker, not a checker, but like you've had a different route with education. Didn't you start at Oxford?
Sure, yeah, I did.
At SOAS?
Finished at LSE.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. So the thing is, you know, a lot of chefs kind of they get into cooking because they maybe weren't so great at academic stuff. I mean, I was all right at academic stuff. You know, my parents were Chinese, so we got...
They made you work.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in London.
Yeah.
I grew up in London.
Whereabouts?
In Dulwich first, and then in Victoria. And I was good at school. I was always good at school. My parents were really big on education.
Why did you move?
Because we had to be close to the restaurant.
So your dad's restaurant was there?
Yeah, my dad's restaurant is on the site that we have the restaurant now.
Which
is in Pimlico.
It's just beautiful. It's not Ebury Street, is it?
Wilton Road. So posh people say Pimlico. Non-posh people call it... non-posh people call it Victoria. Right. Posh people call it Pimlico.
Okay, got it.
Or they call it Southern Belgravia.
Oh, my God. But it is a really sweet little road,
it's a lovely,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's where your parents' restaurant was?
Yes, it's 1985. And so when we moved to Pimlico,
and what was the name of the restaurant?
Kim's. So that's my grandmother's maiden name.
Kim.
So we went to school, and then we'd go finish school. We'd go to the restaurant. The chefs would cook for us. We would, you know, we would entertain ourselves by joking around with the staff. And then we'd get locked in my dad's office while he was working. We would, I always remember there was a photocopier. We just photocopy our asses and photocopy our faces because there's nothing else to do. And then I went to school because my
school?
I went to school to City of London.
That's a posh, clever school.
Yeah, with a massive Jewish community.
I know.
Yeah,
City of London boys, I learned
so much about Jewish religion.
So you know about matzah balls.
I know. We used to have basically Friday afternoons off because the classes were so empty.
So funny.
Yeah, in the second year when everyone
but
was having...
But your parents loved that.
Not. They didn't know. They just received the bills for school fees. In the second year where everyone's having their bar mitzvahs, you know, it was like party central.
Wild
the
time.
Yeah. And when we got to GCSEs, everyone had a VW Polo.
Oh my God.
Ripping around the roads of North London. And you know, education was always really big in my family. Like my grandfather was like in the army and he valued education above everything. He used to always say that education is the only thing that people can't take away from you.
Yeah.
Which I've just really weirdly started to tell other people this, yeah. Even though I used to like cringe when he used to tell me.
Can you get more drink out, darling?
Okay. So about the meal, just quickly, because I'm going to tend to it, because my mum says that I don't help enough, and she was very scared about cooking for you. For us, it's really exciting having chefs on,
yeah.
But also slightly daunting. So we always ask the chef to bring something.
Yeah, but chefs are the easiest people to cook for. I mean, I don't know about other chefs. I'm the easiest person. I don't think I've ever complained in a restaurant. I think I complained once.
Why?
In a beach club, in Dubai.
Yeah.
Because it was a bit. It wasn't really my scene anyway.
Yeah.
And then they were like, they gave my kids like chips with literally a kilo of salt inside.
Oh, no, that's
and then,
not good.
And then they said that it was my fault.
Why?
I'm not quite sure.
Did you go, hang on a minute?
And I was like, hang on a minute. And then, you know, you never ever want to be that person who goes, well, you know, I'm a chef, but then they go, oh, well, you know, it's not really salty. And you're sitting there like cringing. Oh. Like your face is literally screwing up.
I hate it when they tell you know something is salty or cold. And they say, it's not really. And you say, but I'm tasting it. It is.
So we've cooked for you. Well, we haven't really cooked for you because you've brought the main, which actually okay. I saw
well,
on the Instagram.
Cooked anything.
We were really stressing out about what to cook with this cod head.
I've just done some rice.
Cod cheek.
Cod cheek.
I've just done some rice, but we don't have to serve it. We can just eat.
No, rice is good.
And then with the greens,
Jessie's doing that.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm doing it, but I'm just trying to keep it really simple.
Yeah, even though I just spoil them, just throwing them in the sauce.
Oh. Jessie, should I do that then? So should no, I not?
You need
just,
to, I think you need to.
Should I cook them a little bit? Yeah, I'll cook
them.
Yeah,
just cook them a little bit.
Okay,
yeah,
and
yeah.
then spoil them with the sauce. I love that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So I want to know. I bet your parents didn't want you to be a chef.
Absolutely not. No. And actually, I didn't want to be a chef.
What did you want to be?
I don't know. Something where I didn't have to do much work and get paid a lot of money.
What did you study at university?
So I initially studied chemistry at Oxford.
Do you like chemistry?
I loved chemistry up until the point when I got
subject,
there.
It's a subject, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's challenging in a nice way.
I think.
The only point is when you get to university and you actually have to study it properly, it becomes a different, you know, it's like when you enjoy cooking but then you become a chef and it's like, well, it's not so fun anymore.
But what were the other chemistry students like? Were they a bit geeky?
No, and actually, you know, I always say the most beautiful thing that I learned from my time in Oxford was that actually people are just people. 18-year-olds are just 18-year-olds. It doesn't matter where you're studying, what your background is. Basically, when you go to university, there's only really two things you were interested in, and studying is not one of them. Drinking's one, and I won't say what the other is. And actually, that's a universal across, near enough.
Did you meet your wife at Oxford?
No, I didn't. I didn't, but I've known my wife since we were 12. Yeah,
you're
now
kidding.
I'm 39.
How?
My parents were family friends with her family, and she's from the Seychelles.
Oh,
yeah,
how interesting.
So people always ask, like, why did you bother come to England? It can't be for Andrew and it can't be for the weather. So why are you in London? Luckily, she...
She was always here.
She saw something in me. She came here for holiday when I first met her at 12.
Really?
But she only really moved here when she was 20 something. And we started working together in my parents' restaurant. We used to be front of house together, actually. And I used to...
At your parents' restaurant?
Yeah, and then we used to go out a lot. And basically, she's really hardcore. I don't know whether or not it's just her or it's... I think ladies in general are stronger than men in the sense, like, going out and then just go straight to work, whereas I just passed out on, like, the back PDR table at the back for the whole of lunch shift.
Oh, my God.
And then my dad would walk in going, where's my son? And she would pretend to cover for me going... Oh, you know, he's just doing stock take downstairs to really, like, passed out.
Recovering.
Yeah. And she was still working fine after about 10 vodkas and oranges. It was just like, wow, how is this possible? You know, she's an incredible lady. I mean, she's
beautiful.
Yeah,
she's front of house. She still works at the restaurant.
She works at a restaurant. She worked at the restaurant up until the week before Isla was born. Where literally she'd walk up to the door to try and open a door for
people,
and her belly would whack the door handle, and we kept on telling her to stop working. She's like, no, I'm fine. But, you know, she's very stubborn as well. And I remember when my son was born, he was born on Christmas Day, and she was like, oh, I won't need to take any time off work now, because it was during our Christmas break.
Sounds like you just
So, yeah, I couldn't ever do that, I don't think. You know, I can work hard, but I've got a funny feeling that if I have to carry a baby around for 9 months and then you were telling me to go straight to work after ejecting, I don't think I could probably do it. I think I'd probably collapse in a big pile of mess in the corner somewhere.
So you met, when did you fall in love?
I think we always, you'd have to ask her.
Was your first kiss in that restaurant?
No.
Jesse. Please.
Well, it's really important details.
You know, I think the biggest thing is when we were working together, I got thrown out of university when I was studying chemistry.
Why did you get thrown out? Are you allowed
to talk about it? Yeah, okay, of course I can. You know, it's part of growing up, I think. I think, like, you know, I came from an environment where it was an all-boys school and, you know, you did sport, you did rugby, you did football, and you were surrounded by just boys all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you get to university, it's like, wow, boys only make up half of the world's population.
Interesting.
And it's like, wow, you can have so much fun at university. You're no longer at home. You get given a student loan for doing nothing to apparently live off. But obviously, most of it gets spent on evening nights out. And then you forget that university, actually, you're meant to do a little bit of that thing called studying.
And you didn't.
You just rebelled a bit.
I don't know if it was about rebelling.
I think he was just feeding his feet, darling.
I think maybe I was just so happy that I got there. I forgot what to do after I got there.
Your parents must have been so proud.
Yeah, they were so proud. They didn't last long, though.
Yeah, how did they feel when the old boot came?
Oh, my God.
I don't know, because it was... You were just kind of rolled with it for like a year and a half until I went back into university.
Okay.
And then they really wanted me to do law.
Of course they did.
And I refused to do law.
Oh, my God.
So I studied social anthropology, pretending I was studying social anthropology with
You're
law.
You're so naughty.
I know. And obviously they were like, what are you studying? And my parents are really Chinese. So they didn't even know what anthropology was. And they couldn't even pronounce anthropology.
I had a struggle, yeah.
But it was a great 3 years. Not so much about studying, but kind of like there were little bits of it that were really quite
interesting. So you were at LSE?
Yeah.
And it's known for its good thinkers.
It's known for its economics.
Yeah. Economics.
But
clever people also.
There are some very, very clever people there.
Yeah.
So when did the pull back into the family restaurant happen?
Right, so when I was at LSE, I was enrolling for the second year and my father passed away.
Oh, I'm
sorry. So my mum at that time had some restaurants with my father, and so I just went back to help out, basically. Mm. And I went back to help out. And then I kind of realized that actually, if you really want to help out, you really need to kind of understand the ins and outs of a restaurant, which ultimately means you need to learn to cook.
Had you ever cooked before then?
No, just these lovely noodles.
Okay. So, and you hadn't had any interest?
I hadn't had any interest, no.
Were you a good eater?
I don't know if I was a good eater, but my dad, throughout our childhood, was really big on doing what in Chinese they call gien sik, which means experience as a phrase. But actually, if you break down the two words, it means to see and to understand. And he always took us to loads of different restaurants to see and understand how the other half lived. I remember going to Le Ranger on St. James's Street with him. I remember he took us to Marco Pierre White's restaurant. at Oakrum when we were kids.
Wow. Did you appreciate it?
No, of course not. No. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But I do remember that we ate something there where I thought, this is delicious. And then you go to other restaurants and order the same item. But it's nowhere near the same. So that was a kind of a thing growing up. But then when I went back into cooking, initially it was just, let's just learn the basics. Let's learn the basics so that if the kitchen ever have a coup and walk out, at least we can maybe get through the day or the week.
So what were those basics?
Those basics, kind of like just understanding basic processes, understanding that how to make a basic sauce, understanding how to blanch vegetables. And then obviously when you learn this stuff, you learn it at college where they all concentrate on Western cookery. And of course, Chinese cookery is very, very different across the board.
Well, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
It's a very, very different set of rules and parameters.
Yeah.
But it was good to understand.
But you're clever and you've done chemistry.
You know what? I did a lot of work by myself. So I remember during that whole period, there was about a 6-year period where I would learn Western cookery and try to understand. I knew nothing. I remember I used to go to cooking college and had no idea what they were talking about. Like they were talking about julienne this and this and brunoise that. And I also had to wing it because I didn't want to sign up to level 1 or level 2 because that was just like...
So you'd done your degree by this time?
I'd done my degree.
And then your dad passed away.
Yeah.
You're trying to keep the kitchen going.
So what at that point I was doing university. I was going to work, going to university because, you know, when you go to LSE, you only go up to like 3 hours a week or whatever it is. Then I'd go to work. Then I'd go to evening college twice a week. Then I'd go back to work again. And I did that for like 2 years. And then after that... I decided to go to China. So I went to China because my mum... Well, I told my mum I wanted to go, and then she rang up all her friends.
She must have been so pleased you wanted to go.
No, she was like, are you sure you don't want to study law?
No!
And I forgot to say, actually...
Did she want to keep the restaurant going?
No, I think my mum was just giving up by that point. She was just, like, tired.
Was she cooking?
No, my mum's a terrible cook. And my mum used to send us to school with sugar sandwiches. And back then... Back then, when it wasn't illegal, like if I gave my kids sugar sandwiches now, I'm pretty sure the teacher would be ringing me up.
How old was your dad when he passed away?
Not old. I think he was like under 50. Oh,
shit.
Yeah, under 50. He died very, very quickly. It was like a 4-month process from being diagnosed to passing away. It was just that whole period was just kind of just not really understand what's going on, just roll with it.
Mm.
And then my mum was just like, okay, you want to go to China? You sure you don't want to go to law school? I'd enrolled for law school and I'd got in. And on the way to the induction, I just didn't show up. I was on the tube to Temple Station and I just got off the train and went back. I'd paid for enrollment and everything. That was the day to go collect your books or something.
And you thought, it's not for me.
Yeah, and I remember I read the thing, they said, bring a suitcase. I was like, sod that. Like what, anything that requires, yeah, they're like, bring a suitcase for your books. I'm like, this is not for me.
And what did you think about when you were on that train on the way home? Were you like, I'm gonna have to tell my mum?
I don't know. My mum at that point in state, in that point in our lives, she was very kind of supportive for a Chinese mother in the sense that she was just kind of like, you do what you have to do. I'm gonna continue to nag the hell out of you. But you do what you want to do, and we'll work with it.
Mm.
And I remember even when we opened the restaurant in 2012, it was carnage. Like, you know, we sit down now with a 2-Michelin-star restaurant, and we now are so fortunate to have 30 odd incredible staff at the restaurant. But when we first opened, I didn't know what I was doing. I forgot to buy the black bin bags. Like, I'd forgotten so much stuff. I didn't understand how to run a restaurant properly. Because it was all kind of self-taught. And, you know, the only way to kind of deal with it at the time was just to get frustrated and to get angry. And I remember we must have lost maybe 50 chefs in like a month.
Why? Because you could cross.
Cross is a very nice word. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cross in the mildest form. But yeah, and it was only because I was so immature.
You're very, very biddable. You're very kind and nice.
Well, I'm just like Jekyll and Hyde, you see.
I've seen him on the past, Mum.
Oh, I'm a lot better now. I'm a lot better. I think since I've had kids, I've been a lot better.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tell me about that time when you were in China and you went to China after right. you kind of committed to the cause.
Does he need yeah. to himself enough?
Do you, how's he? I love that Andrew's come here and
I'm so
had to steam his fish in the oven with a very clever contraption.
No, when I was in China, I tell you what,
it's
you
delicious.
Know, if you read my official bio, it's very much like. You know, it's like when people go to Australia for a gap year and they come back with dreadlocks, right? And they make out that they found their soul and now, oh yes, I really found myself. And then they went to Thailand and Cambodia for like 3 days and they think that they became the Dalai Lama overnight. And actually, when I went to China, people think that actually it was this big, massive kind of search for Mecca of Chinese gastronomy. Actually, the truth of the matter is that I went there because... I was bored, number one. Number two, I wanted to improve my Chinese.
Okay.
Because I was...
Did you not speak it at home?
We spoke it at home, but I used to bunk Chinese school because it was on a Saturday. So
do you speak Cantonese or Mandarin?
So I speak Cantonese, but obviously all my chefs speak Mandarin, so I've had to learn to understand.
I thought Mandarin was the more common...
It is, yeah. It is. You know, Cantonese is a very...
And
very,
that's what they teach at school, Mandarin.
Exactly, because it's useful. Yeah. You know, Cantonese is like learning Creole. It's like you'd learn French instead, and you know, just because it makes more sense because more people mm-hmm. speak it. So you know, when I went to China, it was like, you know, I'd really want to learn more about my Chinese. I wanted to learn more about being Chinese, and I wanted to learn more about Chinese food because actually, you know, when you grow up in a Chinese restaurant in London, you kind of understand in the back of your head that it's probably not exactly the same as cooking food in China. So my mum was great, you know, they hooked me up with loads of friends in different hotels and restaurants all over China. And I just basically spent time with all of them and working in these different hotels. And they were all very kind of accepting of me. And they were a little bit confused while I was there because they were like, you're educated, right? And I'm like, yeah, well, I went to university, that's what you mean. And they're like, well, why are you in the kitchen? Because being in the kitchen is like the last
menial.
Resort. Normally.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, they'll be like, oh, don't do that. Don't worry about that. That's fine. Let's go out. And I'll be like constantly, like, no, I want to stay and I want to help you. Like, no, let's go to the karaoke bar. I'm like, no, like...
Oh, karaoke.
No. I saw me you in Chinese karaoke bars. So I went there and I spent time there. And people always say, you know, did you learn a lot? Did you learn loads of recipes? I think the most important thing that I did learn was about diversity. The fact that, you know, China is a country that borders 14 different other countries. You know, it's got one of the oldest gastronomies in the world with 1.4 billion people at the moment. There's so much diversity. And actually, recipes are just recipes. Once you've learned the basics of cookery, the rest of it is kind of understanding culturally and psychologically, like the approach to cooking. And then I came back and thought I knew everything, like every young chef. And obviously, you don't know anything. So you put together a menu, you think you're gonna win every award under the sun, and you think that you're gonna be the best thing since sliced bread, and obviously you end up having an absolute nightmare.
Are you a bit cocky?
No, I'm not. Openly, to myself, to myself, I'm like, No, I'm not.
No, I don't think you are at all.
But I have very high expectations of myself in the sense that I think that I can always do better, even though maybe I can't.
But you go from not cooking,
yeah,
eating in the restaurant, and then making this decision for the family and like commitment. When did you fall in love with cooking, or have you ever fallen? You must have, right?
Yeah.
When did they like? Was there a light bulb moment with a particular dish or something, or a moment or a meal that just went, oh, okay, now I'm doing the thing that I'm supposed to be doing? It's not bloody law, it's not chemistry, it's kind of. Or do you feel like you're doing the right thing?
No,
now?
No, it was weird. I remember very well. I was in a Sichuanese restaurant in Sichuan, and my Sichuanese Chinese is non-existent. So I didn't really understand what was going on. And I just kind of, I used to call it Russian roulette. You just kind of go on a menu and just point at something and you just hope for the best.
And people expect you to know what's going on because you're Chinese?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they you know, they're talking away to you in Sichuanese and you pretend you understand it because you know.
And is there a dialect like Scottish or Geordie?
Yeah, Sichuanese is a dialect.
Yeah. So is it like Geordie or?
No, it's probably even more different. Like, okay. You know, in a sense, like Geordie probably, if you spoke English, you could probably understand Geordie quite easily, but actually Sichuanese is quite different.
Okay.
And I remember when I ordered it, what came out was like a pond of water with like a mushroom floating in the inside.
Oh my God.
And I just remember that was the turning moment. I thought, wow, like Chinese food is really diverse. And I think there's a story to be told here. In the sense that I think Londoners and a lot of Western culture...
We just don't know.
Yeah. And I think that was the light bulb moment. It wasn't so much about, I love cooking, or, you know, which I do, but it was more about the fact that...
it's everything to do with the whole cuisine, yeah.
And it's the fact that there is this story to be told and this this message to be given on challenging people's misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the light bulb moment. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to do something called scalding with oil.
Oh, Mum, do you want to watch this?
So this is
I'm going to take a picture.
This is a very, very Chinese technique.
Okay.
Hold on, wait, don't scald yet.
Have you found that lots of people are doing, because, you know, fallow are doing a kind of turbot head at the moment.
Yes.
Oh, do you feel like it's in... No, it's. I don't know who was doing the head before, but like.
Jesse, can we have a proper bowl, please?
Is what, Andrew? Jessie, do you need? Okay, but do you feel like it's encouraged? Well, the kind of whole sustainability people moving towards more sustainable eating, or do you think that?
I think the thing about Chinese cuisine is that it's always been about sustainability,
using every part,
head and nose, head to tail, it is. And although it might be on trend at the moment, it's something which is just part of Chinese cuisine.
Yeah.
And it's a lot with a lot of kind of ethnic minority cuisines, right? You know, this idea of salting or preservation or fermenting.
Like kimchi and things.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But, you know...
you suckers, we've been doing this all the time.
Exactly. You know, and even if you look at kind of like historical Jewish recipes, right? There'll be a lot of salted stuff for preservation.
Yeah,
there'll be fermented, you know, and the big thing is that just because there hasn't been a big massive PR message behind it, that people think that fermenting was invented in Nordic countries 5 years ago, it's just ridiculous, really. Mm. And so, I what I want people to understand when they have something like this is that I'm not reinventing the wheel.
Mm.
I'm just trying to celebrate something which has been part of our gastronomy for thousands of years.
Yeah.
It's just a bit of rice if you want
Look at her, she trusted up with this spring onions. Where's your kind of go-to place when you're not thinking about A Wong?
Yeah.
When you're switching off, where's a few restaurants that you absolutely love?
Sure. So, number one, we have two kids, so we need to have a restaurant where kids can go to. Which is a bit of a problem these days.
Yeah.
Because obviously when you're a chef and you're in the industry, you don't want to put your friends in an awkward situation, right? You don't want to bring them to someone's dining room and then they trash the place.
I know.
Because, you know, I've made that mistake once or twice. You know, because chefs are so nice. They're kind of like, Andrew, don't worry, my kids are the same. You've got to bring them so they can learn how to behave in a dining room. I'm like, really? And then you go, all right, let's try.
You're like, when can we bring out Peppa Pig or Paw Patrol?
That's it. But actually, as a diner, I love really kind of... number one, spicy, and number two, kind of homely food. So I love a Pakistani restaurant in East London called Lahore Kebab House.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
where is it?
It's a
Commercial Road?
Yeah, or just off Commercial Road.
Okay.
And then I love to go to, Chinatown. Because I still have...
Where do you go in Chinatown?
So my friend's restaurant is... my friend's dad's restaurant, who still remembers my grandfather, because they still... they traded... Times crossed, even though he's a lot younger than my grandfather. Yeah. He used to own a restaurant called Harbour City, and now it's they moved it next to the supermarket, so it's New Long Fong. So we were there...
New Long Fong, I think we've been there.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. Right next to the supermarket. If not... his son owns a restaurant in Wingip Supermarket. It's called Reindeer Cafe. So I'd love to go there for like roast Chinese meats.
Mm. Does Natalie have a look in with the Seychelles cuisine?
Yeah.
There aren't many Seychelles restaurants in London.
Does she cook at home?
She does cook a little bit. Her mother, grandma, is an amazing cook. Like she, if you ever go to the Seychelles, like they might take you on these tours of like, you know, let's show you Creole cuisine. But actually, Natalie's mother's food is the best. It's like octopus curry. Mm. Octopus salad, crab curry.
Mm.
Absolutely. And they have these red snappers, which put the whole of the world to shame.
Yeah.
Because they're about like 4 foot long.
Well, you won't get that in a fish kettle.
You would never get it. Yeah, exactly. They literally just cut an oil drum in half and cook it on top of the oil drum.
So, and your kids like, they want to go out for Chinese food at the weekends and stuff like that, and then...
Yeah.
Darling.
Yeah, yeah, my kids are very...
Do they like your food?
No, they hate it.
Oh, it's absolutely so annoying.
They absolutely hate my food. They're like, Daddy, what's his name? Dumpling Legend makes better dumplings than you. I'm like, I don't think so. Deep down, I'm like, raging.
That's brilliant.
All right, I'm giving you the cod. I tell you what, I'll give you the cod cheek because I just want you to taste how different a cod cheek tastes when you cook it inside the face as opposed to as opposed to just having it like pan-fried.
I'm so happy you've done this, Andrew.
Thank you, darling.
Well, thank you.
Because, nowadays you can buy cod cheeks from the fishmonger, it's like a scallop.
Mm-hmm.
But...
That's very delicious. It's also very spicy.
Get some rice in you. Awesome things on set, Mum. Is it very hot? Oh, no, Mum, don't make a scene. Drink something.
Get some yogurt.
No, you're not going to shame me.
No, come on. You be fine.
It's all right, I'll have a bit of rice.
What is your podcast about?
So it's called XO Soused, named after a really famous sauce in Hong Kong called XO Sauce.
And what does that taste like?
XO Sauce is basically like a really luxurious vinaigrette. And the story is that in Hong Kong in the 1960s, all the chefs started to compete with one another who could make the most expensive sauce. So they named it after XO because that was like the most revered French cognac at the time. And it's basically like dried ham with dried scallops and dried prawns, cooked out with some oil and some chili. And you can literally put it on anything. It's like oyster sauce. And, you know, Dr. Mukta, who we work with, is constantly, giving me facts. And actually, the important thing is that actually the work that we do ends up being stuff on the menu. Because, the thing is actually for the first five or six years of the restaurant, we would just take dishes that I like to eat from around China. And they would just reproduce them, right? So they'd be like, I love black pepper crab. So I just want to put black pepper crab on the menu. But this is the first time where we've actually gone, you know what? I just want to cook something where maybe other restaurants don't have on their menus. But it's a reflection of the work that we talk about and the stories that she tells me.
So it's kind of combining your social anthropology, sociology, kind of, I don't know, university degree. There's a little bit of that in there.
Yeah, I think so. I think it definitely, I mean...
Your mum should be proud.
What are some of the new dishes that you have put onto the A1 menu that have been, kind of learnt out of this podcast?
Sure. So another one would be this idea of celebrating the journey of Columbus going to China. Mm-hmm. All those ingredients in the 1500s. So obviously potatoes are not Chinese. And things like tapioca root are not Chinese. They're kind of South American ingredients. And so we've got this dish which centers around the fact that when I'm in China, one of the breakfast items that you buy a big sweet potato and they put it into a paper bag for you in the morning and you just chew it while you're walking down the street and going about, you know, your morning stuff. So it ended up being this kind of like barbecued baked sweet potato with like licorice infused soy sauce with fermented black bean and then tapioca pearls. When you eat it, it really reminds me of eating kind of fatty pork belly because you get the crust, you get the kind of the jellification of tapioca, and then you get the meatiness from the starchy potato, which again taps into a lot of the work that we do about kind of Buddhism and Chinese vegetarianism, which actually again Buddhism didn't arrive into China until 1 AD, so a lot of this cuisine is actually, it originated from India if you want to be really technical about it, but this idea of taking vegetarianism to another level to mimic textures that you might associate with meat, that is something which Buddhist cuisine has really taken to a whole new level. You know, and you look now, you know, all this stuff in the supermarket, and my cousin works for a really big fish finger factory company,
yeah, right?
And they're putting millions into R&D on finding vegetarian substitutes for meat, but actually in China we've been doing it for thousands of years across the board with so many different things.
This is delicious, by the way, Andrew. Thank you so much.
This is so good.
Is that just kind of like your MasterChef reaction?
No, it's gorgeous, but I don't know. I couldn't cook it the way you've done it. Why does it not taste oily and you've put oil on it?
This is a technique of Hunanese and Sichuanese food. Like, it looks like there's a lot of oil in it, but it doesn't taste oily.
No.
It tastes quite clean on your palate.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't see it uncooked, because it looked fabulous cooked. Have you had the eye?
I'm going to leave that to Andrew.
You sure you don't want it?
No.
Really, yeah. Positive.
You have it, darling.
You sure?
Eat with good health.
Are you okay?
Oh. So that's the eye.
Like I know you a little bit more. Oh, he's getting the stone out now.
No, this is the eye socket.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
And then this is kind of like the milky interior of the eyeball, which you can eat around it. Oh,
why do you eat around? Okay.
Like, oh, the two,
is it like a lychee?
No, it's like a really overcooked egg yolk.
Oh, wow. I'd never think about it like that. You don't look like you're enjoying that much. Or are you just concentrating about getting the stone?
It's quite a big eye, don't you? I'm not going to lie. Normally, when we're eating family meals, it's a small sea bass. And so the eyeball is a lot smaller. This one's the size of a ping pong ball.
How did that feel?
No wonder your children just want super noodles. Andrew, this is just a little taste of something.
Thank you.
It's an apple, honey and walnut cake. And it's a Sky Gingell kind of recipe.
Is that how you pronounce her name?
Glyn, I don't know.
From Somerset House. Yeah.
Would you have some?
I'd love some.
I need to ask you.
Sure.
What your last supper is.
I was thinking about this on the way because I've been listening to it. And actually, I think a more interesting question is, who would I like to have around the dinner table?
Okay, do that. Well, yeah. Do both.
So I'm obsessed by Obama. I've got like a really weird kind of like obsession with him. I just love the way he speaks and that he's like cool.
A good person.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can almost like feel it in his voice that he's a nice person. Like annoyingly nice, but
super
intelligent.
And then you see Michelle and you're like, oh my God, you're both like the best people. Yeah. And like, you deserve each other.
So I said him. And then I was watching a documentary on Bruce Lee yesterday. And so I'd love to chat to him. Because he died at 33 and I'm already 39.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and if he'd lived, he would have changed the world.
How did he die?
He died of like a heart attack from like a reaction to a painkiller. But there were loads of conspiracies about possible other ideas of how he died. The saddest thing is that he died a month before Enter the Dragon got released, which basically took him into like the global stratosphere of like Hollywood A-list, which he'd been trying so hard to achieve for the whole of his life, right? So I'd love to have him at the dinner table. Yeah, I only got two at the moment. It's a bit of a sad one.
Any women?
Yeah.
Yes, they're good. We like Michelle Obama, obviously.
Yeah, she's got to be. Yeah.
Do you have female chefs?
Yes. Yes. I tell you, and I say this real honestly. We are so lucky in our kitchen because I haven't done this intentionally, but it's the way that I like to work. And I like to have a team around me which is representative of society, which means you have people from different backgrounds.
Yeah, because it wasn't all Chinese people at all.
Yeah, not only different backgrounds, but also different ages.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one guy who's in his mid-50s. We have a lady, Mei Lan, who's... She looks really young, but I think she's like 50-something. Good genes. You know, we have people from Spain, from Bangladesh, from Uzbekistan, from China. And I think that it's so nice to have that dynamic in a kitchen, because actually a lot of kitchens in the country, in the UK, they're very kind of male,
Party,
yeah. Male rugby team-esque kind of demographic. Mm. And when you see these young chefs, when they come into your kitchen, they behave in a very odd way, in the sense like, you know, would you behave like that if there was a lady present? And of course they wouldn't, right? And I think sometimes just having a nice mix present in a working environment, everyone adapts, you know. You're not gonna be misogynistic and overly like ridiculously outspoken when there's a nice mix or there's people to respect in the kitchen.
We've got 10 more minutes with you and I still haven't got your last meal.
Oh,
we've
last meal.
We've got two guests.
Yeah.
Three guests at the moment.
Three guests. Last meal, dim sum.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely dim sum.
Where do you go for your dim sum? You do it at your restaurant, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, we do it at a restaurant.
On Sunday?
No, we don't open on Sundays.
No, okay.
But I love
dim
sum.
Why don't you open on Sunday? Because it's very...
Because Natalie would divorce me.
I know, but it is a very Chinese thing to have a Sunday meal.
Yeah, you know, that we just have to make Saturday Sunday.
Okay.
Saturdays are the new Sundays.
That's quite good. So you do Saturday dim sum?
We do everyday dim sum.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Fine.
And the one thing we do, which I think we're the only restaurant...
You serve it in the evening?
No. We serve it as like a platter, but not as a whole menu. I think we're the only restaurant in the world that serve dim sum individually. So I'm pretty sure when you go to dim sum, like there's three in a basket, you have one each, and then you're staring at that last piece, right? You're going, well, who's going to eat that? So that was a massive bug for me when I was opening a restaurant. So I was like, we're gonna sell it individually. Which is absolutely a nightmare for logistically for the kitchen. But I think it's important to do so that guests can try everything.
Can you get it ready beforehand and then just steam it at the end?
Oh, you have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because we've been up since like 7 o'clock making it. So it'll definitely be dim sum. It'll definitely be some kind of soup noodles because I love noodles. And then dessert. Again, it'll be probably something really... it would either be like Indian mango or like mango sticky rice, or if it was like a French dessert, it'd probably like it'd be like Pierre Kaufman's like pistachio souffle or like a passion fruit souffle. Only because like you know people always make out that souffle is like really difficult.
It's but
they're
dead
not
easy,
they're not difficult to make at all, right? But actually I love that romance that everyone's believed that souffles are impossible to make.
Well, you've got to get the liquid right, though,
you do,
because otherwise you're going to end up with a big soup at the bottom.
But actually, I don't mind that.
No, I don't.
I don't mind
but
that.
You're not supposed to.
Sure. But my big thing about the souffle is that the inside needs to be wet.
Yeah, me too. And I love it that, however, the bigger the rise.
Oh, really? You're a size person.
Yeah, I like size. Yeah, size matters, Andrew, on your souffle, the height.
Another person that did that, I'd love to... had my grandmother there because my grandmother
Kim
because my grandmother never saw me really become a chef. I think she came once when we first opened a restaurant, but when it became a restaurant which I was really proud of, it being coming part of my identity as being Chinese, she never really got to eat my food. Besides that, what else would I have? That answers your question.
That was
though.
Quite decisive.
Drink. Yeah.
Drink of choice.
Drink. What did I drink?
You're not a big drinker, I can tell.
No.
Just not as big as you, Mum.
No.
No, I'm not. I'm not a massive drinker. G&T.
Okay.
Yeah, I love a G&T.
G&T. This champagne, I really like. Well, not champagne, sorry, sparkling wine. This goes really well with dim sum.
Ooh,
and the one that we had really well because to me it's
so
got like,
do you serve that at your restaurant?
It's got like a hint of strawberry, but everyone
it's got a sweetness to it.
Everyone else in the wine world disagrees with me.
Well, I think it's got a green taste, almost apple-y, I thought.
Well, that's it. I love the fact that actually I'm an absolute Philistine when it comes to wine. And I'm happy to let people know that I'm a Philistine. What else would I do? For old time's sake, my wife loves mango bubble tea.
I've never had bubble tea. It's tapioca, isn't it?
It's tapioca. Yeah. It's big balls of black tapioca pearls inside like mango juice. What else? Oh, sour beer. There's a really cool company. We've just started serving it in a restaurant, actually. It's new to me, too. But it's a sour beer like with a kind of like a pruney kind of undertone to it. And again, this is education on the job, right? So,
yeah.
So Danny says, try this with either some Peking duck or with some spiced lamb.
Because of the prune. Oh, yeah. Yes.
It really... And I love watching customers' reaction to it. Because, you know, when they get in... when having a taste of menu, you give them like a, you say to them, oh, this is a sour beer. Like you can see in their eyes, they're like, I'm not convinced.
Well, maybe the word's an odd word to use. Is it really sour?
It is. It's sour. It's got okay. like a pecan note to it, but it's got this pruney kind of palate to it, which is really nice as a beer to accompany food.
You've just said you're not a drinker, but you've just named four drinks, so I appreciate that. That's amazing. I want to know, final question, Andrew Wong, what would your mother's or your grandmother's worst table manner be if they were going to see like somebody doing something at the dinner table that would be like offensive to them? What would it be?
To them or to me?
To them.
My grandfather's biggest one was holding a rice bowl with two hands. Oh. Yeah, like that. Because in traditional Chinese culture, if you cup a rice bowl with two hands, with your hands underneath, it implies that you're begging.
Yeah.
And he always said that was massively disrespectful to the family because you're not begging. So he would always say that. And my grandfather, again, was really, really old-fashioned. So he didn't believe in people being left-handed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is there anybody left-handed?
Yeah, my sister's left-handed. So growing up for years, my grandfather tried to get her to use her chopsticks on the right hand because he said that, you know, left-handedness is not... It's not so acceptable.
It's so funny because like, I think of left-handers as like creative.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
Andrew, what's your podcast called? Just so everyone can hear it. What like
it's again. Called XO Soused, as in Soused as an S-O-U-S-E-D. And XO is an X-O kiss O.
And has it launched?
Yes.
And
yes.
So, and you're kind of doing the episode.
We're doing it ongoing each week, as I said. We're trying to intrigue people about a particular Chinese technique or ingredient.
Amazing.
I think you will.
Thank you so much. Thanks. We've tried to have this in the diary for a good since yeah. I came, but so it's been like over 2 years. I'm so happy that we got to have you over. I'm
Thank
so
you
glad
so
that
much
Mum
for
got to
cooking.
Witness the I mean the, charisma much and
oh,
like
gorgeous.
Yes.
Definitely.
And you now need to go and eat more of his food.
Yeah, now we look forward to seeing you in a restaurant. No more excuses.
Coming.
Thank you so much.
No,
for
absolutely
Thanks,
pleasure.
Darling.
I told you, I've been trying to get him ever since I went for his food, and that was in October 2018. I wanted this guy on. Wasn't he fab?
Absolutely adored him.
So much.
So charismatic.
So charismatic, so much information, and so
but
much
he should
cod
be running a course on Chinese food. He's the most knowledgeable person about food I've ever come across.
I mean, that's what I do love it when we have a chef on.
Yeah.
Particularly that
a chatty
chef. I mean, he was fun.
Yeah.
I loved it. Thank you so much to Andrew Wong for coming on.
And thank God he ate the eye.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like he struggled a bit with that old eye.
I think he did, darling.
Old big bollocks.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you, Andrew, for coming on his day off, and he must be zonked.
He's a delight.
Yeah.
An absolute delight.
I mean, you probably heard it in there, but A Wong, get yourself there. Good luck getting a table. And also, XO Soused, go and listen to his podcast. If you enjoyed all the stories that he told you tonight.
I'm sure there's a load more.
Yeah, go to his podcast.
Everyone should listen to it.
I'm going to go for Saturday dim sum. Or maybe I'll go for Tuesday dim sum. Who knows?
Okay.
And I'm taking those super noodles home with me.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Andrew. And thank you for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.